Although this is Gidon Rothstein, and this is Perek Chaf Hey of the book of Yechezkel, chapter 25 of the book of Yechezkel. And in yesterday's Perek, I mentioned that soon we get to the point that Yechezkel speaks towards other nations. I had forgotten how soon it was, because in fact it is now. So sometimes the soon that you're expecting comes now, and so now there will be a long section of the book in which Yechezkel speaks towards other nations. So all the way through Perek Lamed Bet, I believe, at least, will be towards other nations and the Jewish people. So in Pasuk Chaf Hey, in Perek Chaf Hey, we start, and so this will obviously be easier to absorb because it won't be about the Jewish people and the punishment they're getting, but even as we're doing it, it behooves us to think about the messages that are being sent and the larger perspectives that we're being taught. And this is true of many other Nevi'im as well. So you, the faithful listeners, will have heard it in the book of Shmuel, and the book of Yirmiyahu. I believe you'll have heard it in Yeshayahu, and also in Yirmiyahu. And so as we're hearing it now, it's worth continuing to pay attention to what the messages are and what their larger purpose is. Ben Adam Shim Panecho Bnei Amon. So he's told to give a prophecy towards the people, the children of Ammon. Since you said he'ach, so he'ach is a word that I think we have seen in other occasions in the context of mourning and sadness, but here it's being taken in the sense of it's a good thing that they're crying out. The JBS English has it as aha, but aha in a good way. And Rashi points out, not here, Rashi points out later when they slap their hands together, so we'll get to it, that there are things that are both signs of mourning and signs of joy and happiness. Well, Rashi will say it, but here I think it might be relevant here as well, that this is a sign of them enjoying it. I mean, Shikin Yechal, when my Beit HaMikdash is desecrated, is turned into Kulin, Ve'lamah Yisrael Ki Nasham, in the land of Israel, is laid waste and laid desolate. But Yehuda kiel chubak olayim, when the people of the southern kingdom, right, meaning Adma Yisrael being Malchut Yisrael, and when Beit Yehuda, the southern kingdom, goes out in exile, so they're celebrating. Lachain hininot nach livnei kedem lemorasham. I'm going to give you to the people of the east to be taken by as a possession. Ve'yishvut yirotehembach, and they're going to put their towers in you. Ve'anubach mishkenehem, and they're going to put their houses among you. They're going to eat your fruit, and they're going to drink your milk. And I'm going to make Rabbah their central city, a place for camels to pasture and to eat. And the land of Ammon is going to become a place just for sheep. And you will know that I am Hashem. So the punishment here is for their reaction to what's happening to Jewish people, their celebration. So what should they do? So they're supposed to, ideally, have come to understand that this is punishment from Hashem, and that if Hashem is doing it, it's a sad thing that is happening, and it's not a good thing, and not to celebrate in the same way. And here too, we have the refrain that was true for Yechezkel when he talked to the Jews, it's here too as well. The end of Pasuk, hey, v'yidatem ki Hashem, you will know that I am Hashem. That's the whole message here, that's the whole purpose, and that's the goal that we're going for. And the definition of knowing that it's Hashem is that when you see that happen to the Jewish people, it's not a question of celebrating. So you can say, well, let them celebrate that they're getting their punishment from Hashem for what they did wrong. So first of all, it's just not true that that's what was happening. But aside from that, that's not a matter of celebration, that's a matter of sadness, right? If you, especially for those of us who are parents, so when a child gets a punishment they deserve, the experience is not one that in any way involves happiness. It involves sadness that it had come to this and upset that they were forced into doing this. And then if a sibling sees it, and a sibling says, oh, it's great, they're getting punished, so the reaction of the parent will be that that's completely the wrong reaction to what it is that's going on here, because that's not what's happening. So here too, Pasuk Vav, Kichor Mar Hashem Elokim Yan Mach'ach Yad. Since you clapped, so Rashi points out the clapping here is a sign of joy, even though earlier in the Sefer it had been a sign of sadness, there are physical actions we do, depending on context, can be both joy, either joy or sadness. Rakacha baregel, and you stamp your feet, vatismach bechol shatecha benefesh el adma Yisrael. And you were just happy and rejoicing completely without any restraint over what happened to the land of Israel. Pasuk Zayin, lachein hinini natiti yadi alecha unitaticha levaz lagoyim. So So Hashem says, I'm going to make you into, so Vaz Lagoyim, the JPS English has it as a source of booty or loot, that, but it also means that you're going to be, they're going to look down on you. V'hichraticha min ha'amim, and you're not going to be among the nations. V'hichraticha min ha'aretz, you're not going to be a land of your own. Hashmincha, I'm going to destroy you. V'yadata kini Hashem. So destroy you, I don't think necessarily means literally that the people will be all destroyed, because then what does it mean that you'll know that I am Hashem? If you're destroyed, you can't know anything. So it's both possibilities together, I think, is that A, they will be destroyed from independence and from nationhood, but that's not the same thing as being destroyed completely. And then, in addition to that, they will destroy from nationhood, but also the nations around them will hopefully learn lessons from what happens to them. Pasuk Chet. Now a new nation that we're moving on to. Komar Hashem Elokim Yana Mor Moav V'Seir Hinei K'chol HaGoyim Beit Yehuda. And so this is a similar plan. There, the people of Ammon are blamed for celebrating the downfall of the Jews. People of Moab and Seir didn't necessarily celebrate the downfall of the Jews in any particular way, but what they said was that this is a key thing. Hinei K'chol HaGoyim Beit Yehuda. The house of Yehuda, meaning the southern kingdom, is like any other nation. So that's an interesting thing that they're being blamed for, because it's supposed to be the reaction of the nations is supposed to be to say the Jews are a special nation, and they have a special set of goals, a special set of obligations and responsibilities, and they need to be treated differently. And so the people of Moab and Seir are being reprimanded for having not done that. V'chein ni potech et ketef Moav meharim me'arav miketzehu tzvi eretz beit ha'yishimot ba'al me'on v'kiryatayim. And therefore, I'm going to open up their ketef, their flank, their area, so that other people can attack them. The plains of the Radak plains, the plains of Moab, meaning the open areas of Moab, they're going to be the plains of Moab are going to be open to attack and to be taken over by other. By other nations. So, from all of its cities, from one end to the other, it's going to be Tzvi Eretz, all of the land, Beit HaYishimot, and then the names of Beit HaYishimot, Ba'amon, Kiryataim, all of them are going to be opened up, and they kept them up in Amon, and it's Atiyah L'morasha, just like Amon, B'nei Amon are going to be conquered by others, so too, the people of Moab will, L'man lo tizacher B'nei Amon b'goyim, and it's going to take all of Amon out of memory, Uva Moav Eseh Shvatim Yadu Kine Hashem, and I'm going to do punishments to Moab as well, and then everyone will know Kiani Hashem. So if Ammon is going to be wiped out here, we said before, maybe they're not going to be wiped out. Here it seems to be they're being conscious to Moab. Moab maybe won't be wiped out, but Ammon is going to be wiped out, and whoever's left will know Kiani Hashem, that I'm Hashem. Just on the claim that the Jews are like any other nation, I would just point out that Rashi Radak reports the tradition of Chazal, that one of that, well, so Rashi Radak both say that part of what fuels them saying this, what leads to them saying this, is they see them going into exile, and so therefore they say that Hashem has abandoned them. That's what Rashi says. Hashem clearly has abandoned them and doesn't like them. The Radak makes it even stronger that when the southern kingdom stays in Israel after the northern kingdom gets sent into exile, so that their reaction, instead of saying we just avoided it because Chizkiyahu did real tshuva as the book of Malachim portrays it, instead of that, they think to themselves, because we have the Beit HaMikdash. As Yirmiyahu complains, they say, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem, Heima. So, now that they're going to see them, I'm sorry, the Radak thinks not that the Jews have said it, although they did say that. The Radak thinks it's the other nations that said it. They thought, oh, the Beit HaMikdash is what makes them special. So when they see it destroyed and going to exile, they say, see, they're not just like the rest of us. That's the Radak's version. But Rashi quotes the Chazal, and the Radak quotes it elsewhere, but Rashi quotes the Chazal that says that when they went into the Beit HaMikdash, they pulled out there the designs of the Kruvim, the pictures of the Kruvim that Shlomo Melech had in there, and they showed it because they were intertwined, because they were supposed to symbolize the connection between God and the Jewish people, and that has a marital aspect to it. So in the context of metaphor, and in the context of understanding what marriage is ideally supposed to be about, we understand why one would make a picture like that, but they brought it out in the worst possible way. So, see, the Jews are just like that. They're just caught up in the same kinds of concerns with sexuality and with ordinary human things, that they look down on us for. And they try to, so that would mean they were consciously trying to battle the picture of Jewish exceptionalism. The Jews themselves were trying, even though they weren't fulfilling it in reality, but the story they were telling everybody was, we're different because we believe in God and we believe in these things, etc. The Psikdir of Kahana has it in a slightly different way, although I think it's a relatively the same thing. The way the Psikdir of Kahana was that they'd pull out these images and they'd bring them all around and say, look, the Jews always claimed they weren't worshipping Avodah Zarah, and see what they had inside. So this is a harder version of the Medrash, because given what the Nevi'im are complaining about, it's hard to imagine the Jews were walking around saying, we don't worship Avodah Zarah. You can construct a reality in which that was true, but it's hard to imagine they were saying that, since they didn't seem to believe that that was a value. If they believed that was a value, they would have listened to the rebuke of the Nevi'im all that much better and more quickly. So I find it hard. I think that that might be, or I would at least hazard a guess, that perhaps that was part of what led Rashi to do it in a different way, but that is what Psikdir of Kahana has, that version of it. So Moab's going to get punished. Kolmar Hashem Elokim Yana Sot Edom Bin Kom Nakam Levet Yudah Vayashmu Hashem V'Niglu Vahem. So now we turn our attention to Edom. And so the Radak says the point is that when they see the destruction coming, they don't remember their bonds of, this is similar to the Book of Avadah, they don't remember their bonds of brotherhood with us, and they just ignore the destruction that's happening to us, and so therefore they are going to get punished as well. So Lachin Komar Hashem Elokim Enatiti Yadi Al Edom V'Hichrati Mena Adam Uvehimah, I'm going to remove from Edom people and animals, are going to be laid waste and desolate. Unetatia Chorba Miteman, and I will lay it in ruins from Teiman Udidane Bachar Yipolu. Teiman Dan, they're going to all fall by the sword. I'm going to take my vengeance against the Dome B'Yanam Yisrael. So at some point, right, the Bnei Edom are watching the destruction of the Jews and not doing what they should be doing and not reacting in the way they should be reacting, not reacting with a sense of brotherly love and a sense of an attempt to protect, to at least join in the suffering. So they will be punished. The punishment will be that the Jews who will be required to forget those brotherly feelings as well, they will produce the fury of Hashem on Edom via duet nigmati nu Hashem Elokim, and the Edomites will be expected to recognize the vengeance of Hashem coming against them. So it's interesting in the context of understanding the parak. You might take this parak as just being, we're going to celebrate now and enjoy taking vengeance. So the repeated refrain that I've drawn attention to, that the people of Edom and everybody else is supposed to understand this as being Hashem's vengeance and punishment for their failure to recognize the Jewish people's exceptionalism, but it's all about really getting people to recognize Hashem, is I think confirmed by that they will know. Oh, I'm sorry, and it's also confirmed by a Gemara in Gittin that I wanted to bring to your attention. The Gemara in Gittin, which is one of the Gemaras that you're allowed to learn at Tisha B'Av, so there were years where that was what I would do, because there were like three blot of Gemara, and why not? And so there it tells the story of, I think, Niron Kesar. It starts with the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, and they invite the wrong guy to the party, and then they kick him out, and he's embarrassed, he doesn't want to be kicked out, and he begs not to be kicked out, but the owner insists on kicking him out, and he gets very upset, so he goes to Rome, and he tells them stories, and he goes to Niron Kesar and tells him the story. And Niron Kesar believes him. The Jews have rebelled for whatever reason. He tells him the Jews have rebelled, and they send an animal to sacrifice, and the Jews refuse to sacrifice it because the guy put in the whole story. So Niron Kesar comes with an army to Yerushalayim, and before he goes to Yerushalayim, and before he actually attacks, he shoots an arrow to the east, and it falls in Yerushalayim. He shoots an arrow to the west, and it falls in Yerushalayim. To all of the directions, they all fall in Yerushalayim. Then he says to a baby, to a child, "Psok li psukech." Tell me what pasuk you learned today. I would just point out that "psok li psukech" implies that the kids were expected every day in school to learn at least one pasuk. You can imagine if you have more time, you'd learn more psukim. But learn meant that they knew them by heart. They knew what to say. So when he says "psok li psukech," and this happens in the Gemara a lot, "Amalei renatati nigmati be'adom biyana mi Yisrael," and he goes on. Right, I will give my vengeance against Edom in the hands of the Jews. So I would just to pause and have nothing to do with this parak, just to point out this whole idea of psukli psukeich is one that we are sadly deficient in. And if we only had our children learn one pasuk a day, but did it starting from age 5 until age 10, so that would be like 2,000 psukim they would know. I think it's like 2,000 psukim, 5 years, 365 psukim a day, 1,825 psukim. If you have an average about 30 psukim a perek, so 1,825 psukim is 50 prakim, something like that. 50? A little more than 50. 60 prakim. That's just about 60, exactly 60 prakim. So 60 prakim is a sizable amount of chumash if you have kids and we're talking about really, really, really knowing it. So that's something to consider, that their educational models and our educational models diverge, and I'm not always sure that ours come out the better. In any case, at the end of the story, Niron Kesar understands that Hashem is setting him up, because the pasuk is, I'm going to take vengeance against Edom for what they do, and in the Gemara's metaphor is Rome and Edom are the same nation, and so he runs away and he converts V'nafak minei Rabbi Meir, and he eventually has Rabbi Meir as a descendant. So the connection between Niron and Rabbi Meir is interesting, because Rabbi Meir is one who first of all learns from Acher and therefore probably has some exposure to what we call today Chochmah Chitzoniyah, to other wisdoms than pure Torah. There's also that Rabbi Meir is just held up as an example in the Gemara and the Tana, among the Tanaim, of somebody who thinks well and understands well. And so Niron's insight, his ability to have insight into what's really going on and to say, for all that Hashem may want to do this, that doesn't mean I have to be part of it, doesn't mean I have to be the one to be the hand of Hashem unless Hashem specifically tells me to. So that earns Niron an important place in the annals of the Jews' understanding, and the annals of our understanding of what was going wrong and of how various people reacted to it or did or did not handle it in the right ways. Pasuk, let's go on to Pasuk Tedvav, Komar Hashem Elokim, Ya Nasur Plishtim bin Kamal. Since the Plishtim acted vengefully against us, and they took their revenge against the Jews without any restraints on themselves. They just did what they wanted, the mashchit evat ulam, and now they did it with eternal hatred, a deep hatred of the Jews. So that's something. So we talk about antisemitism and whether it's a new phenomenon or an old phenomenon or how it came about and all these kinds of things. So at least here, at least in the case of those who were living right near the Jewish people, it seems like Yechezkel is comfortable saying that it's just an ancient hatred that they've carried with them, and they just dislike us. And I would suspect that it would at least partially have to do with our claims of exceptionalism and the resistance to that. Because there's great resistance to that idea. You don't like to think there's some people who, by virtue of birth, have some set of advantages over the rest of us. So that's what's perhaps going on with Plishtim. V'chein kol mar Hashem Elokim in yinotei yadi al Plishtim v'ichvati et Kereitim. I'm going to wipe out Plishtim and the Kereitim, and avahavati et shevit chof hayam, the rest, I'm going to wipe out the rest of those who live on the shores of the sea. V'asid yivam dekamon gidolot b'tochachot chema. I'm going to make great revenge with lots of furious punishment. V'yaduki ni Hashem v'tivni v'tibam. And they will know that I am God when I put my vengeance among them. I would just point out on these psukim two things. One is the Radak points on the word kreitim. He thinks that, so people talk about why they're called kreitim. Not the Radak. I will say that something I said before in Pasuk Yudal, the Radak says that when it says that the Jews will take vengeance against Edom, so the Radak points out we haven't seen that, so maybe it wasn't by Cheney, maybe it happened, but I've never had it because it's never been said, so maybe it's going to happen yet in the future. So I would assume it's going to happen yet in the future, and it's something to watch out for when it happens. The other issue I would point is that Rashi said, why do they call the Plishtim Kreitim? So Rashi first suggested it means a nation that our Kreitim deserve Karet, deserve to be cut off and completely destroyed. And then Rashi says, but you know what? I've seen them refer this way in Tzfanya as well. So I think that maybe there's just a place among the Plishtim called Kereti, and therefore they're called Kereitim. And he finds a pasuk in Shmuel for that as well, so that it might be just a geographical designation of them. They lived on the shores of the sea, and that's what part of what their livelihood and lives were about, and that's why they're called Kiriti, because they have a place they're called Kiriti in their land. Then there's a mechilta to Rabbi Yishmael that pointed on the pasuk in Shirat Hayam that says Natita Yemincha. So the mechilta says it means you stretch out your hand. When God stretches out His hand, evildoers are removed from the world. And another version that is, so the idea of Hashem's hand, we sort of spoke about some of this when we were talking about the Maaseh Merkava back in Perek Aleph and the other places that it showed up, but here it seems like some kinds of emotions on the part of Hashem are expressions of God's involvement in the world, and different kinds of involvement in the world produce different kinds of results. So here the Mechilta is saying that the involvement in the world called Natita Yumincha, God's right hand, or God's hand being stretched out in the world, is one in which evildoers get destroyed and is the way that God's impact is felt. So one of the central themes to watch for and to think about in speaking about the destruction that is going to be brought down upon other nations is to notice and to realize that that destruction is brought not for the sake of vengeance, but because those nations stand in the way of God being known in the world, and the refrain of the vengeance coming is V'yadu kini Hashem, and they'll know that I am Hashem. Because after all, the point of all this is not the vengeance, not the punishment, and not the times of trouble. The point of all this is to get to a world in which everybody knows kini Hashem. They know that Hashem is ruler of the universe. They know that Hashem's not just know intellectually. They know and accept Hashem's power, and they are moving along with the rest of us. They're hoping for and working towards a world in which Hashem's power is well known, and we can long for that world as well. Have a great day.